The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Oral questions put by members to ministers. As we begin oral question period put by members to ministers, I remind all honorable members that the use of Blackberries, laptops, and any other electronic devices is not permitted during question period, so they are to remain off during that time. Thank you. It is now 2:43, and we will end at 3:43. The Honorable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week, we learned that Nova Scotia Power is seeking another rate increase. Since 2002, power rates have increased by more than 36%. Mr. Speaker, and now Nova Scotians face yet another increase. Nova Scotians can simply not afford another increase in their power bill. So my question to the Premier, does the Premier believe that these new proposed rate hikes from Nova Scotia Power are fair and justifiable?
The Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As the Leader of the Opposition knows, that's exactly why there is a Utility Review Board. They look at the rate case that is put to them on behalf of Nova Scotia Power. They look at all the evidence and they decide whether or not the rate increase is justified. Mr. Speaker, I believe that, in fact, is the very function of the Utility Review Board.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Life is much more expensive for Nova Scotians under this government, Mr. Speaker. The HST is up. User fees are up and over 1,400 fees, services that Nova Scotians access. Property taxes are on the way up. And now, Mr. Speaker, power bills are going up again. And as usual, the most vulnerable in our society are being hit the hardest by these increases. So my question to the Premier, will the Premier tell Nova Scotians what his government's plan to do to rein in power bill increases in the province of Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The first thing we did was to make sure that the HST was taken off of all of the energy bills in our province, Mr. Speaker. And in fact, we brought in the affordability tax credit, which not only offset the HST increase, but it put more money in the pockets of those who are least able to afford it, Mr. Speaker. I understand that 51% of Nova Scotians qualify for the affordability tax credit. We brought in the poverty reduction tax credit. Mr. Speaker, we brought in the largest single increase in income assistance rates in more than a decade, Mr. Speaker. This government is very much concerned about those who can least afford increases.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the answer is simply they're not going to do anything. The Premier knows that Nova Scotia Power is regulated by legislation, and this government has substantial control and say over the operations of Nova Scotia Power. There's a precedent for audits to be done on certain aspects of Nova Scotia Power's work, Mr. Speaker, such as the fuel cost estimation. But a performance and value audit has not been done on the operations of this monopoly. The time is now, Mr. Speaker, and I hope government will agree that Nova Scotians deserve answers on the operational costs of Nova Scotia Power. So my question to the Premier, will the NDP government order a performance audit on Nova Scotia Power's operations?
Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, it is ironic, given that the privatization of Nova Scotia Power took place originally under the Conservatives, but then supported by the Liberals when they came into power. Mr. Speaker, there are two functions at the Utility and Review Board. One is to ensure that all the costs that go into the base rate are audited, that there is sufficient information to justify whatever rate case they intend to make. And there is also a consumer advocate who is at the Utility and Review Board for the very purpose of ensuring that the interests of ordinary consumers are represented, Mr. Speaker. I assume and would desire that they, of course, fulfill their respective roles.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Speaker, my question to the Premier is also on power rates. Last week, Nova Scotia Power announced that they may file for a rate increase as much as 8.8% for Nova Scotia residences. That increase could be as much as 20% by the year 2015. Nova Scotians have already had their pockets picked enough by this government, Mr. Speaker. And so my question to the Premier is this. Will his government intervene at that rate hearing? Will they stand up for the people of Nova Scotia and their pocketbooks? Yes or no?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question. Certainly, there will be representatives of the government of Nova Scotia who will be at the Utility and Review Board hearings. We will be asking questions. I mean, we have the same kind of interest to make sure that we protect Nova Scotians, that the Power Corporation is able to make the rate case that they are proposing. And it requires, I think, a thorough examination. And this is one of the reasons, Mr. Speaker, why we have done everything we can through the renewable electricity plan to say we have to get off of fossil fuels. We have to stop being hostage to the international fossil fuel market. And that's why this government is doing something about it.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, intervening means a lot more than just showing up and listening in. Intervening means standing up for the people of Nova Scotia when they're facing these kinds of increases. Not just individual Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, but Nova Scotia small businesses are also struggling under higher power rates and higher fees. Now, the government gave itself the ability last fall to ensure that a small business advocate is appointed as an intervener. And so my question to the Premier is this. Has the government ensured that a small business advocate will be there to intervene on behalf of Nova Scotia small businesses? And if not, why not?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, what we set out in legislation, of course, we intend to follow through on. It's one of the reasons why we put it in legislation in the first place. Much as we have done with the other things we intend to achieve on the renewable electricity side, one of the things that we intend to do is to move this province to 40% renewables by the year 2020. And one of the important reasons for that to happen is it does away with the instability in the fossil fuel market to the extent that you have renewables. This will ultimately be good for the people of Nova Scotia. It will mean stable, more stable long-term electricity rates, something that I'm sure the opposition can agree with.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess that's a no, and that's too bad because in May 2008, the then member for Dartmouth Coal Harbour had some very strong opinions about rising power rates. In fact, he said, and I quote, "Now with power bills going up, possibly as much as 20%, they are rightfully worried about freezing in the dark next winter," said that member. "These increases will make life less affordable for every family in the province, and these increases will affect jobs as Nova Scotia industry struggle to remain competitive." That member didn't hide behind the Utility and Review Board then, Mr. Speaker. And so my question to the Premier is this. Now that he is in a position to do something about it, why not intervene on behalf of Nova Scotia households and small businesses?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, as I just said, although we are on this side of the floor instead of that side of the floor now, virtually from the day we came through the door, we wanted to make sure that we made life more affordable for people in this province. So, Mr. Speaker, that is why we made sure that the tax came off of home energy. It's why we took the HST off of children's clothing, children's shoes, a list of other things as well, Mr. Speaker. It's why we brought in the affordable tax credit, Mr. Speaker. It's why we brought in the poverty reduction tax credit. Mr. Speaker, we're going to do everything we can in this province to make life more affordable for those, for all Nova Scotians, but particularly for those who can least afford it. I know that the leader of the Conservative Party appreciates my efforts, even if he doesn't agree with them.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is also for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, in response to issues raised by members of the public, The official opposition submitted questions in advance to the Minister of Justice regarding the payment of professional bar association fees by the taxpayers of Nova Scotia on behalf of the member for Cole Harbour. That would have taken a short time in estimates and given an opportunity for the government to clear the air on this issue while addressing the issue once and for all. I'm sure the Premier can appreciate that that would benefit him and allow Nova Scotians to move forward from this issue. So, Mr. Speaker, will the Premier table in this House before the end of question period today an accounting of all professional fees and such as bar association fees paid on his behalf since he was first elected in 1999?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, you know, this is a question that has been raised here many times. I can tell him that I have already done so.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that is incorrect. In fact, the Premier only tabled information back to 2006 and has repeatedly avoided the question of the period between 1999 and 2006. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians have an absolute right to know exactly how much, if anything, was paid out on behalf of taxpayers. And oddly, the Premier has only given us information for the short period of time. And in response to the official opposition advising the minister we had questions, the government's response was to cancel debate on all justice issues at a time when people are literally shooting at one another in the streets. We wanted to give the Premier a chance to clear the air, but this action to treat the legislative process as a nuisance has only increased suspicion. So, Mr. Speaker, will the Premier advise this House whether any fees, Canadian or Nova Scotian, or any other professional fees were paid on his behalf by the province of Nova Scotia before 2006?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, when I said that I tabled all of the fees, I meant that, all of them. There was nothing paid before that time, of course. I find the question by the member to be extraordinarily regrettable, Mr. Speaker. You know, and to use something like tragedies that are happening in the street to try and make a political point like this, Mr. Speaker, I have to say I'm extraordinarily disappointed.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. The only thing shameful is the fact that if the government had nothing to hide, they cancelled the discussion on those very issues. So, Mr. Speaker, it's actually this government that has refused, in violation of legislature convention for over 20 years, more than 20 years, but at least 20 years, is refusing to allow debate on those issues. So, Mr. Speaker,
question, please.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier, if indeed there was no fees paid between 1999 and 2006, why is his government refusing to allow debate on justice estimates and the very important issues which are on our streets at the moment?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it's not unusual. As I said before, this is a member who would rather be wrong than be quiet. You know, Mr. Speaker, this is nothing that he said in his preamble is true. Nothing was cancelled. In fact, there was a request from the Conservative Party that we go ahead with the transportation and infrastructure renewal estimates because they weren't able to get into the main chamber. If it was important to the member opposite, why didn't they bring it into the main chamber when they could have called it at their own leisure?
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. For the past week and a half, this NDP government has been under siege. They neglected to address the seriousness of the prescription drug addiction problem in the Valley and have not yet to date put any proactive solutions to address the situation. Today, to no one's surprise, Mr. Speaker, we learned that community safety is being compromised. If it isn't tragic enough that individuals have been unable to seek out timely access to treatment, pharmacists must now fear for their own safety. My question to the Premier, why does government continue to address this issue in a silo instead of holistically?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, as the member opposite knows, last week, I tabled for him a copy of the letter from the Minister of Health to the Chief of Police in Kenfield that was within a couple of weeks of his writing the Minister of Health. It set out the program that we were going to follow for the purposes of assisting with what is a very serious issue before the people in the Valley. Mr. Speaker, we are working by bringing the resources of the Department of Health, the District Health Authority, and of course any other resources that we can and are able to bring to bear on this important issue.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government was warned a year and a half ago that a solution involved an interdepartmental response. Instead, one government department addressed it by looking to see if there were patterns around those who have passed away. Instead of addressing the needs of today, individuals needing treatment and not able to access it are turning to extraordinary means to address their addiction, and the potential for innocent people to be hurt in the process remains high. My question to the Premier, when will the Premier invite the Minister of Justice to develop solutions which will ensure that public safety needs are being met?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Of course, the Minister of Justice is always involved in that process. Society is changing, that's true, and they're always trying to evolve new ways to be able to meet the challenges we find. One of the things I do find ironic is that if the member opposite is reading the same accounts I'm reading, what it said was that the supply of the drugs in the Valley was going down, and that was the reason why you were seeing the kind of events that you were seeing, which of course means, Mr. Speaker, that justice and health, the initiatives they're undertaking, are actually working.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, you know, last week this Premier shot across the floor, and I should be ashamed of myself for not reading his government's letter at the community meeting about setting up a committee, by the way. Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm here to say that I can look myself in the mirror. Unlike this Premier and this government, who should be ashamed for not adequately addressing a situation a year and a half ago, a situation that is moving out of control. My question to the Premier, when will this government admit that their less than adequate response a year and a half ago has failed the people of the Annapolis Valley?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, in fact, that response was a year and a half ago. It was within a couple of weeks of the matter actually being raised. It set out the program that we were going to proceed. And I would just point out that it was not the fact, Mr. Speaker, that the member opposite wouldn't read the letter at a public meeting. It was that he denied it existed.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party. Order, order, please. Order, please. The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on October 13th of last year, the Premier and his government finally announced their support for the building of a convention centre in Halifax. Now, last week, the second deadline by the developer has passed for a variety of reasons, in fairness, including the federal election. And so my question to the Premier is this: will he today reaffirm his own and his government's support, eventually, for the construction of a convention centre for Halifax?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, you know, this whole issue could have been resolved, of course, if the federal government had acted in advance of the federal election campaign. They didn't. We will still wait to hear the response from the federal government. Our position hasn't changed.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Speaker, the Premier and his government took two whole years. They took their sweet time to decide whether to support the project or not, and then gave the federal government a month and a half to get back to them before the election was called. My question is this: when the leader of the Federal Liberal Party, Mr. Ignatieff, expressed a lack of support for the Lower Churchill project or for the shipbuilding strategy, the Premier was very quick to write a letter to him expressing his disappointment that he wasn't supporting Nova Scotia's interest. Now we have an NDP Member of Parliament right here in Halifax, Ms. Leslie, who has been strangely silent on the Convention Centre project. My question to the Premier, will he write to his federal counterpart, the MP for Halifax, before May the 2nd to instruct her that this project is in the best interest of Nova Scotia, just like he did with the Liberal leader?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I know that the member opposite is an avid follower of election polls, Mr. Speaker, but that's not a good enough reason to have to ask questions in the House of Assembly. Mr. Speaker, I don't have to write Megan Leslie. I see her often. We've discussed this on many occasions. It is of course a matter for her to address with her constituents. She's done that on many occasions. She's talked about some of the things that she'd like to see in terms of architectural improvements and those kinds of things, which I think it's perfectly all right for federal members to ask. Ultimately, this is the priority of the provincial government. We've stated it many times. Unfortunately, the federal government has not complied.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party and your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it is the Premier's job to stand up for projects that are important to Nova Scotia. It is the Premier and his government that say they are committed to this project. He mentions polls. I don't know if anyone follows polls more than him, but I happen to have one here. A recent CRA poll that shows that 58% of the residents of Halifax Regional Municipality either completely or mostly support the Convention Centre project. Now, Mr. Speaker, I note that the federal NDP leader, Mr. Layton, who some say is a popular guy, recently told the media here. Oh, just wait. But he needs to know where our Premier stands, because Mr. Layton said when he was last here, our view is that local communities need to provide what their priorities are, and the federal government should be there to support those decisions. So we think there should be a kind of program on the part of the federal government that helps city accomplish these goals that they want accomplished. So in light of the CRA poll that 58% of Haligonians have said this is their project, will the Premier write to Mr. Layton before the federal election next week and ensure that he knows that this is an important priority for his government and for all Nova Scotians? Yeah. Yes, sir.
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the leader of the Conservative Party for quoting at length those very wise words by Mr. Layton. What I can say, Mr. Speaker, what I can say is that this is exactly what this government has been doing, which is standing up for our communities. Whether it's in Halifax or, for that matter, in any part of Nova Scotia, when it comes to federal funding. He mistakenly said that we sat on it for 2 years. Well, Mr. Speaker, I know he wants us to be government for a very long time, but we have not been government for 2 years yet, Mr. Speaker. And he can be assured that we will continue in all matters of federal funding for provincial initiatives, that we will stand up on behalf of our communities.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, in April of last year, the Premier said he could confirm that, and I quote, the funding that is in place for school boards in this province is going to continue to increase. By now, all Nova Scotians know this simply isn't true. The cuts by the NDP have meant valuable programs are being lost. My question to the Premier, why did you mislead Nova Scotians?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I did not. The per-student funding for education in this province continues to rise.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your first supplementary.
The news article in the Chronicle Herald on April 27, 2005, the member from Dartmouth Cold Harbour said, there is any kind of vision for education, we haven't seen it and won't see it, apparently. He said this at a time when money was going into education programs that are being cut today under his leadership after nearly 2 years in office. It has become quite apparent that this government has no vision for education. They have cut funding from reading recovery, math mentors, literacy mentors, youth pathways and traditions, and transitions and teaching assistants without telling Nova Scotians how they plan to ensure our children have the support they need? Will the Premier acknowledge that the cuts his government are making will affect the most vulnerable students in our education system?
Honourable the Premier.
Again, Mr. Speaker, every time the opposition stands up, they put in a preamble that is entirely wrong. We haven't cut anything, Mr. Speaker, nothing. The administration of the school board funds are left to the school boards, not to us, Mr. Speaker. The per-student funding for students in this province continues to rise.
The Honourable Member for King's West on your final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when asked about his plan for education, in the fall, the Premier said his plan was to balance the books. We see him choosing paving over reading recovery, land over educational assistance, and personal tax cuts for his cabinet ministers over math mentors. Will the Premier explain why buying paving equipment is more important to his government than ensuring our struggling students receive the support they need?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to point out that just today, just this morning, we announced a new program for literacy and to ensure that young people are getting the kind of support that they need, Mr. Speaker. Another wise decision to support children earlier on and through grade one into grade three, Mr. Speaker. This is the reason why we are able to make some of the changes that we are able to make is because we've taken expensive programs, thrown them out, and brought in new programming that meets the needs of our students.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the Premier for the introduction to my question. Our education system currently provides a menu of literacy supports for young readers. Reading Recovery Grade 1, Early Literacy P to 3, Literacy Mentors P to 6, Literacy Teams P to 6, EAs P to 6, Resource P to 6, IEPs P to 6, Program Planning Teams P to 6, and an observational survey of early literacy achievement in Grade 1. And I listened to the literacy support framework announcement this morning. The minister made that announcement. It contained nothing new for students. In fact, Mr. Speaker, it takes away from that menu of supports that we currently have for our young readers. So my question to the minister is this: will the Minister of Education explain how more students will get better help with fewer resources?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We have provided a new program for reading that will be able to reach more of our struggling students, where before we had a program that met the need of very few children. This program opens it up. This is a program where we're going to make sure that the child doesn't have to fit a program. We have a program that's going to fit the child. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This morning, the Minister made it clear it was not a program, it was a framework. Now, this afternoon, she's calling it a program. The literacy announcement today, in response to a question from the media, the minister said she didn't know what would happen in any of our classes come September. She doesn't know how schools will make do with fewer support teachers. She doesn't know how many struggling readers will be helped. She has no evidence to back up today's announcement, and she can't say students will have better results. So why would the minister take a proven program out of the full menu of literacy supports and provide one today that has no detail, nothing concrete, and yet it'll be in place in September?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Interesting, I think I was at the same announcement this morning as the Honourable Member, and I was very clear that this is a framework, a program. The use of the word is not important. The use of more people in our schools now to meet the needs of our students. We are going to have a literacy specialist, a literacy teacher, that will be working with the classroom teacher to provide the appropriate support for our struggling readers starting in primary. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you to the Minister of Education. She claims that reading recovery doesn't work, so she took the program away. So she's offering fewer supports for the classroom. The Minister spoke about literacy teachers. In Halifax Regional Board, 39 literacy teachers are expected to provide literacy support in 97 schools. In response to today's announcement, Vic Fleury, the president of the Nova Scotia School Boards Association, said, and I quote, "The challenge will be to do more with less," end of quote. Nova Scotia's school system will have fewer mentors, fewer teacher assistants, no reading recovery as a result of this minister's program or framework. So, will the minister please explain that she can guarantee to parents no student will fall through the cracks as a result of this newly announced framework?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. This framework is to meet the needs of our struggling readers. It will be starting in primary, and we'll making sure that the students will be up and running in grade one starting in September. This is a program, a framework that is going to capture our children that are struggling. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Education. Today's announcement for succeeding in reading, or what I call reading recovery light, is simply a shell, a $5 million framework with no details how this funding will be allocated and how it will help struggling kids. So my question to the Minister, when will Nova Scotia parents actually see details for a proper program that will help kids improve their reading and writing skills?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This framework was done with collaboration from the reading specialists and from boards across the province. The framework is available that I will provide later. I don't have a copy with me. It was provided at the press conference today. Parents can be very well assured that this framework and working with the school boards that we are going to meet the needs of our struggling readers earlier. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Reading Recovery Lite fails to lay out how these literacy teaching positions will be implemented in classrooms and how they will be trained. What are the implementation costs associated with the $5 million framework, and what costs are associated with training a new level of professional?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotia has been blessed with over 600 teachers that have been trained for reading recovery, which means that they have been training with the best practices available for teaching of literacy in our classroom. So using the expertise that we have within our school system, we are going to be able to implement this with minimal cost, and all of the professional development will be provided by the Department of Education. Thank you.
Good. The Honourable Member for Argyle on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Thank the Minister for her answer. But I'm sure that the Minister is being intentionally a little vague right now with the details. After all, it would be difficult for this government to be held accountable if no outcomes for Reading Recovery Lite are identified. This $5 million framework lacks substance to parents struggling with kids. When will this Minister make public the deliverables of the Reading Recovery Lite framework?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. This is a different approach. Where Reading Recovery was a program, a prescriptive program, this is a framework that provides the school boards the flexibility to meet the needs of their children. Every district is different, every school is different. But this provides the school boards and schools the flexibility. I would like to add before I sit, Mr. Speaker, that we are going to be making sure that this is a program that is accountable. We're going to be using the observational survey, the same as we've been doing for the last 15 years with our grade one students. So, and we'll be able to track so that we'll be able to make those comparisons further on down the road. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Mr. Speaker, last week the Cape Breton-Victoria Regional School Board announced that more than 140 positions will be eliminated.
Wow.
44 classroom teaching positions, 50 teaching assistant positions, 14 positions for lunch, bus and grounds, 2.5 positions for school secretaries, 9 cleaning positions, 2 janitors, a library technician, a clerical position, an adult education position, and a head bus driver.
Shame.
I heard about these cuts all weekend, Mr. Speaker, at the Bayplex, and people are afraid for the kids, and they're afraid for the effect it's going to have on education in Cape Breton. So my question to the Minister of Education, how does losing 50 teaching positions, assistant positions, not impact the classrooms?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for sharing your concerns with me, member opposite. I understand that this is a very stressful time in our communities. Every year at this time, there is this process where school boards are doing their reallocations and staffing for the next year. And unfortunately, I have to say that Cape Breton is an area that they are losing 700 in their enrollment next year. So there has to be a rebalancing, and those decisions are at the board, and I know they're doing them respectfully. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Cape Breton Board has been forced to absorb a $5.1 million funding cut in addition to rising cost pressures. These layoffs show that the cuts to this board are extremely deep. Cape Breton also reduced classroom administration by 5 positions, and there will be 6.5 fewer consultants. A human resources coordinator will be reduced over the next 2 years, and another 6 staff in programs and student services will be eliminated. Will the Minister of Education acknowledge that despite administration cuts, the board has to cut from the classroom to balance their budget?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I just would like to make sure that people understanding that sometimes losing a position doesn't mean that a person is lost. Right now, we're looking at declining enrollment, and there are positions that are being cut, but with the retirement and attrition, there should be very minimal people loss within the system. So I just would like to say we need to put our considerable investment to the children that are in our system, and we are funding for the children that are in our system. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And those people who have received layoff notices, I think that the message is pretty clear to them. Mr. Speaker, the board has been very clear that these layoffs are a direct result of the Department of Education funding cuts. So my question is simple. Will the Minister of Education explain to the students in Cape Breton how the loss of teachers and teaching assistants will not affect the quality of their education?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The teachers and educational assistants that will be hired in Cape Breton are going to meet the needs of the children that are sitting in the classroom on September, whatever date we start in September. We are going to make sure that we have the appropriate number of teachers and educational assistants to meet the needs of our children in Nova Scotia. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Agricultural Land Review Committee spent a considerable amount of time consulting with Nova Scotians and concerned stakeholders, gathering information that will guide our agricultural policies for years to come. However, Mr. Speaker, the review still sits on the shelf. My question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Will you adopt the recommendations outlined in the Land Review Committee's report?
Order, please. Order. I would like to remind all honourable members, and when you're recognized by the chair, that you must direct all comments and questions through the chair, and in that question was you. Now, I've sent out memorandums to the caucuses earlier, and I'd ask that you, from now on, refrain from taking you out of the questions, please. The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Through you to my colleague opposite. Land Review report and recommendations has gone to an interdepartmental committee. I think the member would be aware of that. It's our hope that a little later this spring, they'll come back with some recommendations. There's a fair bit of input actually from those other departments who deal with land issues as well. And we're hoping that it'll make a more comprehensive package for Nova Scotians to address some of the issues we saw for the need for the Land Review Committee in the first place. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the discussion about land use in Nova Scotia has divided communities and caused considerable hardship for landowners and those concerned with local food production and consumption. Mr. Speaker, as we know, the Federation of Agriculture is in support of the recommendations. They are the foremost stakeholder on this matter. So my question to the Minister, has the Minister had any further discussions for feedback with them since the report's release?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, certainly to inform them of the present process going forward. And I think, considering their constituency, they're as eager to see what comes from that interdepartmental committee as government is, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the recommendations from the committee are good. We know government has adopted some of the recommendations, and we applaud them for that. However, what Nova Scotia farmers and producers need from government is a plan for agriculture. The department's homegrown success 10-year plan isn't really a plan for farmers. In fact, it's an internal document for the department, not a strategy on how to ensure farmers are receiving the calculated, targeted funding and assistance they require. My question to Minister, will we see a plan to address the concerns of farmers in our province, and will we see this plan in the near future?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Through you to the member opposite. Certainly homegrown success was a departmental guide and for where the people want to see agriculture go in the future. Presently, my staff is working on a five-year program that will actually, I think, put the nuts and bolts to that document. And as soon as that's as soon as it's possible to make that available for all members and all Nova Scotians to see that, we'll do that as timely as we can, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Education. Together with the member for Cumberland South, I recently toured the Windsor Forks Elementary School. I was taken aback at just how crowded this school has become for students, and even more concerned about the 29 students crammed into a small grade 5 classroom. The school library has been forced outside and is now in a separate building near the playground area. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister. Will the Minister tell the House whether portable classrooms will be provided to Windsor Forks and District Elementary School, and if yes, when that may happen?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. That is a question I would have to direct to the Superintendent of the School Board to get an answer for that, because those are not issues that I'm aware of, but I will contact the Superintendent and get back with an answer. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll table a letter today where I wrote the Chair of Finance Committee in Napa Valley Regional School Board last week on a subject, this very subject, to find out whether or not they'd be made available. And through you, Mr. Speaker, the Minister has obviously not discussed this issue yet, and I would ask when that Minister may get a hold of Ms. Margot Tate, who is the Superintendent of the School Board, and find out when that discussion could be had, given that we are now well into the planning season for next fall.
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I wish to thank the member opposite for bringing this to my attention, and as soon as I can, I will be in touch with the Superintendent to have a discussion on this issue. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've toured the school, met with the administration, and written the school board about this issue as the local MLA. My question to the Minister, will the Minister acknowledge the growth that is happening at Windsor Forks Elementary School, support the school board in finding a solution, and ensure that portable classrooms are made available for the coming year this fall?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would like to assure the member opposite that whatever the school board needs for us to work through this problem of overcrowding, which is a delight to actually hear, that we have increased enrollment in an area. So I would like to assure him that I will definitely work with the school board to find a solution to this difficulty. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Education. I'm sure the Minister of Education is familiar with the Nunn Report. It has been a guiding document used by several government departments to address problems of youth at risk. The Nunn Report contains 34 recommendations, all of which were accepted by the province shortly after its release. My question to the Minister is this. How does the Minister see the recommendations in the Nunn Report impacting on programs in our public schools?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you very much for the question. One of the things that we just did recently is that we've just been able to roll out Schools Plus to every school board across the province, and that is a direct recommendation from the Nunn report. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the Minister. I appreciate that answer. My follow-up is with respect to Youth Pathways and Transitions. This was a program, again, that was partly in response to recommendations from the Nunn report. Parents are telling us how valuable that program is. More importantly, Mr. Speaker, students are telling us how important that program is. And it has helped many students remain in school. Now that the program has been cancelled by the Halifax Regional School Board due to funding cuts, my question to the Minister is this. How does the Minister plan to respond to those very same students who are still at risk?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And this is a program that was put on by the Halifax School Board. And so I've learned a little bit about it over the last week, and recognizing that it was an intervention that was up to 12 weeks. And at the time that it was put in place, there weren't as many support systems within our regular school system. And the HRM, the school board, feels very strongly that their supports are within the community and better than they were when this was first initiated. And also that we have other programs like options and opportunities that are available to students. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Options and Opportunities is a wonderful program, but it's not designed for students at risk. Mr. Speaker, this government has not acted as though it is in favour of the recommendations. And the reason it's not acting in favour is because it is taking programs away that allow these very kids to get their academic programming. So my question to the Minister is this. Will the Minister provide funds to the Halifax Regional School Board so that they can reinstate the Youth Pathways and Transition Program?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And this government does recognize that there are children in our community that need supports, and we do recognize the recommendations made from the Nunn inquiry. The decision that was made by the school board was a decision that they made with all their best evidence, and that question is really needed to be directed to the school board around the issues around that particular program. There are other supports available now that weren't available at the time of the creation of that program. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. On Good Friday, media reports highlighted Capitol Health's new cost-saving initiative to reuse single-use medical equipment by contracting an American company to sterilize the medical equipment used in our operating rooms. While the district expects savings, they were unclear as to the amount of savings that will be accrued as a result of this initiative. My question to the Minister through you, Mr. Speaker, is given that the Minister has received the business plan from Capitol Health, could she please confirm whether the re-sterilization of single-use medical equipment was a cost-saving strategy recommended by Capitol Health?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, through you to the Honourable Member, this is an issue that we certainly have debated here before on the floor of this House. It is the practice in some very large health authorities across the country to remanufacture certain medical devices. This is something that is possible to do with good quality control, and the Capital District Health Authority is pursuing whether or not that is something that they can do that will not only be more cost effective but also more environmentally friendly, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your first supplementary.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And in fact, they're doing more than thinking about it, because according to the news story, they've been doing it for a couple of weeks now. So, Mr. Speaker, the people of Nova Scotia have mixed opinions about this issue. While no one finds fault with cutting costs in our healthcare system, and actually they applaud that, many question whether one of the first lines of cost cutting at the province's largest DHA should come at what some may consider to be a potential threat to public safety. With every decision, there is always risk and reward. The people of Nova Scotia deserve to know how much risk is associated with this plan. My question to the minister, through you, Mr. Speaker, is given the minister has the business plan, can she tell us how much the Capital District expects to save as a result of this initiative?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the District Health Authority plans have not been in the department for a full week yet, Mr. Speaker. And we will take the time that is required to analyze the information that has been brought forward in those plans. I remind honourable members that district health authorities are funded to the tune of $1.6 billion, Mr. Speaker, annually. So it's not an insignificant amount of work that is required to go through those business plans and analyze their implications.
The Honourable Member for Halifax-Clayton Park on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I have no doubt that it's a huge plan and that there's an awful lot of money, but this issue has come to light. It's been in the press, it's been public, and I would expect the minister has looked at that. And again, as she mentioned, that it's an issue that's been raised here in the past, about a year and a half ago, I believe. And there are concerns about reusing items that are manufactured and designed for single use. Who is going to be ultimately responsible at the end of the day for monitoring the sterilization process? How can the public be assured that equipment is properly sterilized? Will patients be notified when a single-use sterilized product is going to be reused during their procedures, or will they be left to wonder? Accountability is what we're looking for on this issue, Mr. Speaker. And also there's the question of future liability if it happens to arise. So my question to the minister, Mr. Speaker, is can the minister confirm that it is she as minister who is ultimately responsible for this decision should something adverse happen?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I think it's important to establish whether this issue for the member is about the money that's being saved or is it about the risk to the patient. And Mr. Speaker, my focus as Minister of Health will in fact be with respect to the risk, and that's why this government established a quality committee, and that committee will have a hand in helping us establish the proper standards and guidelines for these kinds of procedures when they are approached in the district health authorities. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Minister responsible for Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations. The department website indicates clearly that the government reviewed the CAP assessment program in 2010 and that the public was invited to provide their feedback on the CAP program to government last October and November, their deadline being November the 30th. Mr. Speaker, through you to the minister, will he provide Nova Scotians today with a status report of the review, and when his government will be saying something on this very important issue?
The Honourable Minister, Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Mr. Speaker, to my colleague across the floor. The government will be saying something on this particular issue. It won't be much today. The CAP review continues. Actually, there's been a lot of interest in the review, and a fair bit of information has come in from stakeholders in this regard. So I think I have made a commitment to the UNSM that we would have a response to them later in the spring. We're still committed to that, Mr. Speaker, but we're pleased with the amount of information that's come to the department.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, again, my question will be to the Minister of Service Nova Scotia. Francis Gillis of Grandmire South, a spokesperson for the Cape Breton Regional Municipality Property Tax Owners
Association admits the cap is not perfect, but he strongly believes that the government must address the problem that led to the cap in the first place before the cap is removed. Does the minister agree with Francis, and can he assure him that your government will come up with a constructive amendments that will recognize the concerns being expressed by the residents of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister, Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe I met with Mr. Gillis and his group. Had a very constructive meeting. I have to tell you, they made it very clear what their issue was, and certainly I think the government is not going to move in any direction that we feel has a negative impact on Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, again to the Minister. Association co-chair Joe Gillis is calling upon the government to assess all properties fairly, uniformly, and equitably. He does not understand why rural people have to pay a premium for having water frontage or living on a river or a creek. Through you, Mr. Speaker, I would like to know if the minister supports Mr. Gillis in his call for a reassessment of all properties.
The Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is a confusing message because on the one hand, I think that the message to the minister is that people like the cap on the assessment, but they somehow want assessment on all properties, which tends to be a bit of a conflict. But what I do want to say is that the government is definitely interested in fairness and a proper application of taxing, and that's what our direction will be coming out of the review, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the NDP government first year, they said that they had 10,935 positions in the civil service. It turned out they actually had 9,976 civil servants. That's almost a difference of 1,000 civil servants. My question to the Premier is, can the Premier explain why the civil service was so drastically underestimated by 10%?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I tried to explain this yesterday, or it was a couple of days ago, to the leader of the Conservative Party. What happens, Mr. Speaker, is that in the estimates each year, you authorize a certain number of FTEs. Over the course of the year, people leave employment. They either leave altogether or they take some kind of a leave. There is time that accrues in filling those positions. Sometimes the positions stay open for a very long time. So what happens is those then become not estimates, but actuals. So over every year you will get a decline between estimates and actuals. If you approve the same number of FTEs the next year, then you'll see that go back up in the estimates the following year.
The Honourable Member for Preston on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, historically this province has the numbers have shown that government has been able to estimate the size of civil servants within a few hundred people. My question again is to the Premier, why all of a sudden are we unable to track how many people are working for the province of Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the differences have fluctuated from year to year as to the amount of estimates to actuals and then back to the estimates the next year. They do vary each year by a bit, but it's always been a range, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Preston on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, is the Premier intentionally inflating the numbers of civil servants in the province, just like he has inflated every other number that he's put out? My question, I guess, to the Premier is, the Premier cannot accurately count the number of people who work for him, How can we expect Nova Scotians to trust any of the estimates that this government publishes?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, if they went back and had a look at the estimates and forecasts for each year over the last decade, for that matter, when that member was a cabinet minister, they would find that there would be a large fluctuation between the estimates and the forecast actuals, Mr. Speaker. That's just the way it works.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is, again, to the Minister of Education. The Pathways in Transition program of the Halifax School Board has been helping high school students with individual needs stay in school successfully for the past 7 years. Information Morning last week highlighted the fact that 27 young Nova Scotians are now benefiting from this excellent program, which increases the individual attention given to students with such medical conditions as high anxiety levels. Now this excellent program is being scrapped because of this government's education cuts. Does the minister support this cut?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I do support are the decisions made by the school boards because they make them with all of the information that they have at hand. So I support the decisions that our school boards are making. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I think my time's getting short. I'm going to go to the last one. We need more devotion from this government to meeting the needs of Nova Scotians rather than the needs of administrators, where it seems there seems to be an added increase in administration costs by government. For the sake of these teenagers, will Minister not contact Chair Irvin Carvery of the Halifax Regional School Board to see that this valuable Pathways and Transition program could be saved?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I will definitely have a conversation with Mr. Carvery, but I will only have a conversation to get more information, and I will not make any commitments at this time to what
order,
I will be asking.
Order, order, please. Order. Order. Oral questions put by members to minister. The time has ran out.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.